My name is Kathleen. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is April 20th, 1995, and Midtown is my home group. And thank you, Billy, for asking me to speak. And I'm grateful to be here. And a little bit nervous, say it up front, but I am really, you know, honored that you asked me to speak. And this is the first time I've ever told my story in an hour length of time, and I have a pretty short drinking history, but I have a lot of sober experience, so I'm going to try to stick to that. But just to tell you where I came from, I actually have a twin sister and a mom who are both sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, and my dad, who's actually a well-adjusted, normal person, and don't know how he got stuck with us, but so needless to say, we had an interesting house growing up, and that's not why I'm alcoholic, but that's where I came from, and I basically remember from the earliest time of just, you know, being a kid and just living in fear, you know, and I was at a conference last weekend, and the speaker said something about the alcoholic approach to life, and I related to it so clearly. He said that we tend to approach life with fear rather than wonder, you know, and that was, it just explained it to a T, you know, and always, you know, I was, you know, afraid to talk, you know, I couldn't do basic things, you know, I was always missing school and stuff like that from, you know, the earliest ages. I didn't have very many friends, I was very shy, I didn't know that it was self-centeredness at that time, but I was just shy, and I remember just, you know, really being by myself a lot, you know, and but being okay with that, you know, because that's what, I was more comfortable that way, and you know, my sister, you know, my twin, who was actually quite the opposite of me, you know, she was very outgoing, she made lots of friends. She was very out loud about everything, you know, also alcoholic. And we kind of grew up together, and we didn't really get along that well. And there was a lot of, you know, arguing and, you know, physical violence between my sister and I. And you know, we had a, my mom, who actually got sober when my sister and I were both 2 years old, stopped drinking, ended up, you know, going back out when we were about 6 years old. When she was 6 years sober, we were eight. And I remember, and I didn't know what that was, because she wasn't drinking, she was doing other things. But she would warn us as we were growing up that you might not want to drink because there's a good chance that you might be alcoholic because there's lots of alcoholism in the family. I didn't know what that meant, you know, and she said that she was. And I never saw her drink, so it was kind of confusing to me. You know, basically, I just remember there's a lot of stuff, you know. I really just kind of lived in my head, you know, and that I didn't have very much awareness about other people at all. And I really didn't. I mean, when I was younger, I think I had a care for other people, but I mean, as I got older, you know, that kind of the fear took over, and I remember just feeling really uncomfortable, and, you know, my sister, not to go too much into her story, started getting in a lot of trouble, and, you know, she started drinking when we were in eighth grade, and she was, you know, getting kicked out of high school, put in, you know, hospitals and mental institutions and stuff like that, and I, you know, because I was so afraid, just didn't really want to, like, rock the boat, and so I was doing okay in school. I wasn't really, you know, doing a lot of stuff. I mean, I wasn't drinking at that point, but I was thoroughly miserable. And, you know, I was playing a lot of sports. I was doing well in school. I had a few really actually nice friends that were good people. And I remember my sister going into hospital one time. You know, she had tried to kill herself. And I just wondering, like, why is she going through all this? Like, why is she drinking? And I remember being drawn to it, you know. As, you know, I think somebody, like, trying to think from another perspective, like, if someone were to see a person going through that, they might not think, I want to do what they're doing, you know? And, that's what I thought, you know? And so, you know, I started looking for a solution to what was going on for me, going on with me from, I remember, middle school. I think I was like 11 or 12, and I, you know, had a few friends that were really into church, and they seemed happy, you know, and I thought, well, maybe if I do what they do, I'll be happy. So I would, you know, go to their church. You know, I grew up Catholic, but I wasn't very religious, and so I thought maybe it was just, I was in the wrong place, you know. So I started going to their, like, weekend retreats and stuff like that, and, you know, and it never, you know, it didn't really do anything for me. I remember going there and leaving very disappointed, because I thought maybe that was the answer, you know. And so, yeah, it got pretty dark pretty quickly by the time I took my first drink. What happened was I ended up going on one of those retreats, and I met a youth group counselor who was 22, I think, at the time, and I was, I think, 14, and I remember asking him if he would, you know, buy me alcohol, because I had made a decision, you know, that I was going to drink. I was going to try this, because nothing else seemed to work, and my sister was, you know, in trouble, you know, and so my parents were focused on that, and I thought, it's perfect timing, you know, and so he said he would buy me alcohol, not on the retreat, but, you know, when we got home, and so I had this friend, you know, and we made a plan. It was a few people from the retreat, and we all got together, and we bought this, you know, it was like a couple of 40s, you know, and we were in the back of this pickup truck. It was very, weird, and late at night, and I remember I didn't have much of a tolerance, but I remember drinking, and I was very afraid because I wasn't doing stuff like that. I mean, if you were to look at my life, I was, you know, if I was in school, I would say about like 40% of the time I was in the health room for some sort of reason that was manifested by fear, you know, and, or, you know, like I wasn't really hanging out with people or calling people or, you know, I didn't have that. So me going out with these people, it was like the first time, like, I had ever, like, done something that I thought other people were doing, you know, like, becoming a part of the world, you know, because I was so isolated and afraid. And so, but I remember going out, and I was still afraid. I was very self-conscious, and I took that first drink, and I remember drinking to get drunk. You know, I hated the taste, but I drank until I felt that point. And I know a lot of people share from the podium that, you know, they have that experience. I really had, it was like a spiritual experience for me. I mean, it was the answer. I knew it. It was like I knew I found what I was looking for this whole time. And I drank, and I remember, you know, I was okay with myself. You know, I wasn't so terrified of the people around me. I didn't even care what they thought of me. And I was always so preoccupied, you know, getting up in front of a room and, like, going to the bathroom. Like, are they looking at me? Like, just totally, like, you know, terrified of life. And so I, you know, I drank and I got drunk. I had not that much, and I really had very low tolerance. It's pathetic. And I remember, you know, nothing happened badly that night. You know, I went, you know, I was kind of carried to my house because I couldn't walk on my own. And it was like the greatest, most, we didn't do anything, but it was the most fun I've ever had, you know, and, you know, I woke up the next morning, I didn't get in trouble, I didn't have a hangover, you know, it was like, and I that's what I wanted to do, you know, every day for the rest of my life. And I remember having that thought, like, if I feel this good from this drink, like, it really occurred to me, like, why isn't everyone in the world drunk constantly? Like, it just blew my mind. Like, I felt like I had found the fountain of youth. Why isn't everyone going after this? You know, like, it just, what was wrong with these people? I didn't get that not everyone had the same reaction to alcohol I did, which took me a long time to realize that. But, so, you know, basically that kind of set the ball in motion. I had discovered why my sister had been going through all this trouble, and, you know, as soon as she came back from the hospital, I told her my discovery, and, you know, we became drinking buddies, and, she was confused, because I think 2 weeks earlier, I had, like, yelled at her and told her she was disgusting for smoking a cigarette, you know, and here I was, like, where can we find alcohol, you know, and she's and she was like, what happened to you, and, I basically, my drinking story is very short, but it was very alcoholic, you know, just from the beginning to the end. And I preferred drinking by myself in my room, not sharing. That's how I like it. I do realize I have a problem with sharing. I mean, I had to share my birthday. I also have to share my anniversary date with my mom. So whenever, so she's on the 17th of April and I'm on the 20th. So it's like, but I didn't like sharing my alcohol. And so, you know, but I was 14 at the time and I had a hard time finding it. So when I first started drinking, I didn't get, you know, I wasn't a daily drinker at first. I think it was like a couple months later I was introduced to drugs, and that was much easier to get a hold of in high school. You know, the drug dealer was not carding me, so that was like my maintenance, you know, and I was pretty much high 24/7 for a few months at least, and I drank as much as I could, and probably like six nights a week, as much as I could get a hold of it, you know, and when I had it, I drank till it was gone, and that was it, you know, and I couldn't control the amount, and I definitely had the symptoms right off the bat, you know, and I remember not a lot of interesting stuff happened to me, because a lot of my drinking was done by myself in my room, and which actually was probably good. And I remember, so it was like my life didn't really change much. I was just drinking and feeling better about it. So I remember I did end up, I did end up getting caught red-handed, and my grades started slipping off the bat. You know, I was like, within months, you know, I was like, you know, getting pretty bad grades. All those good friends or nice people that I was friends with became very unimportant to me because they weren't doing what I was doing, you know, and I was uninterested in hanging out with other people if they weren't going to do what I was going to do, or if they were going to challenge my drinking, they had to be eliminated from my life. And it was from the moment I started drinking, and that was like all I thought about. And I remember, you know, going, I was in an all-girls Catholic school, and I would go, you know, I would go to class, and I would just draw pictures of alcohol and, you know, pot. I remember using my Bible as rolling paper and stuff like that. And I just was very, like, I was wrong, you know. And I didn't, you know, that's all I thought about, that's all I talked about, that's all I cared about. I mentioned I was in a lot of, you know, I was an athletic person. I did a lot of sports pretty much in every season. And I was doing, like, going to practice drunk or high. You know, I was not, not showing up for that. Didn't care, you know. All that stuff that was important to me, not important anymore. You know, it didn't even occur to me that there was anything wrong with that. And I don't think I really would have cared, you know. And so what happened was, you know, my sister ended up coming to my school. She got kicked out of one last high school. And ended up coming to my school because I actually had, up until that point, and it was such a short period of time, I had an okay reputation at the time. And they thought, well, we'll let her in. And, you know, she ended up getting caught. And then shortly thereafter, I ended up getting caught, not at school, but at home. And, you know, she actually wanted to get sober at that time. And she started coming to Midtown meetings and got Bridget as a sponsor. I don't know if she's spoken up here yet. And my mom ended up driving her to meetings because she was 15 at the time and couldn't drive, so she would take her to meetings. And so she had, you know, she wasn't, you know, she was dry but doing other stuff and hadn't been to meetings in years. And so she ended up getting sober by taking my sister. And so, basically, you know, they were, you know, getting sober, and my parents decided that they needed to put her in rehab. And I remember, you know, I ended up getting caught red-handed one night. I mean, I had, like, this altar of alcohol around me, you know, and my mom just walked in, you know, and it was like, she had no idea what was going on with me, you know. I was, like, this good kid up until that, other than, you know, the grades slipping and stuff like that, but report cards didn't come out yet, and so she was just shocked, you know, and I remember she said, maybe we're sending the wrong kid to rehab, you know, and so off I went, and at that point, I had only drank for about 4 months, and I was pissed. I was really pissed, because I wasn't done, and I had just found the answer, and I could not picture my life, because I was so miserable up until the point where I found alcohol, that I couldn't picture my life without it. And at that point, it was a scary proposition, because I didn't know it was possible to be happy without being drunk, you know, or having something in my system, I couldn't see how I could go on without it. And at that point, and so I basically, you know, it was an outpatient rehab, so we'd go to this, it was called Another Path or something, and I would go to school, and I would wear my uniform to rehab. And I remember, because I felt like I was better than the people there, you know, and that reminds me, there's this alternative school by where we grew up in Maryland, and my sister and I, my dad would drive us to school in the morning, and we'd pass it every day, and there would be these kids walking down the street with, like, purple hair and, like, you know, weird clothes, and we'd be like, whoa, and my dad would say, don't hang out with those people, they're bad people, and then, like, and then, like, 5 years later, we're driving Julie to school there, my sister, and that's, like, those were the people I was going to rehab with, you know, and so I remember going to rehab, and I was not, I mean, I told them, you know, oh, and maybe I should tell this before I went to rehab. I actually, before I got sent to rehab, I had, I guess they kind of knew what was going on with me, but they thought I was done with it, before I got sent to rehab, I had had a moment of clarity, you know. My sister had a particular, you know, she was really wanting to get sober at that point, but couldn't. And then I had, you know, had all this alcohol in my house, in my room, and I was getting ready to drink. You know, I just come home from school, and I just had this moment where I saw that, I mean, my life was pretty empty, you know. And it was just a moment of, like, where I was headed, you know. And no one had talked to me at that point, you know, about AA. Like, no one, I hadn't really had any clarity, like, no one had reached out to me yet, but I saw that I was headed in the wrong direction, is basically what happened. And I remember, you know, I called my mom into the room, and I said, this is what I've been doing, and I want to put an end to this, you know. I poured out the alcohol, you know, and I remember my sister had a very strong reaction to that. She was like, no, you know, like, what are you doing? And then, like, the next week I was put in rehab, you know, because I was drinking yet again, you know, so I started going to these rehab meetings, and they were just, like, you know, they send us to AA meetings. My first AA meeting was, like, in this club called the Del Rey Club in Bethesda, Maryland, and it was a 6 o'clock meeting, and I thought it was really weird, you know. It was, like, this room, and they had, like, a microphone that you passed around, because it was, like, the way the room was set up, you couldn't really hear, and it was very large, and I remember it was dark, and it was just strange to me, I think I was just turned 15 at the time, and I felt like I was definitely, well, I was with a young rehab, so that I wasn't, you know, but in terms of the general AA population, we were definitely the youngest people there. And so, you know, I would get up, And I really did not like it at all. I'd get up and I'd go to the bathroom during halftime and not come out until the meeting was over, you know. And that was like my MO. I'd just hide, you know. That's like a theme in my sobriety. I would go hide, and I had a horrible attitude. Oh, God, at that rehab, I would go to rehab, and I would complain. You know, I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I'm not, I didn't drink long enough. I appreciate you trying to help me. I think I've learned all I've needed to learn, and I need to go. And that was like my, if I said anything, that's what I said. I was getting urinalysis every day, you know, or every week, and I would get caught every time, you know. Continued to drink, you know, and I told them, you know, listen, I'm not going to stop, I'm not done, I appreciate you trying to help me, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm not ready, you know, I'm not going to stop drinking, I'm fine, and I thought that was fine. I mean, this really didn't, so when they would, like, I would, you know, get this failed urinalysis, they would pull me aside, and they say, listen, you relapsed, and I would say, no, I didn't, I never stopped, you know, you're not listening to me, you know. That was my attitude. I really didn't see, I had no idea what my predicament was. I just didn't know. And so I, you know, my sister all along had stayed sober, and my mom was taking her to these meetings, and what ended up happening was I was introduced to the Midtown group, and I, in the rehab, they made you get a sponsor, and so I got a sponsor by name only. I didn't really call her that much. And if I did, it was to scream. I would just scream about how horrible my family was, you know. And my sister, you know, she was like very. She at this point, she actually had gotten sober, and she was very excited about AA. And she would always tell me, she'd sit there, "You're an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic." And I would just get rageful. I don't think she knew at that point that that's not what we do, but she's very brand new, you know. And I would just sit there. I remember going to school in the morning, and I was still drinking, you know, like, and I would just, like, pick a spot on the windshield and stare at it, and that would be all I paid attention to. And I would just try to drown out my sister, you know, and my dad, you know, would be driving, and it would just be, you know, just uncomfortable. And I, at that point, I was going to meetings. I was still drinking, you know, and you know, I really just was not done, and I didn't have faith that AA could work for me. You know, I didn't think that, first of all, I didn't think I was alcoholic, and second of all, I didn't see how I could possibly be happy without drinking, and so what ended up happening was, you know, I ended up, that guy who bought me my first drink, who was my biggest drinking buddy, he was my biggest alcohol provider, you know, only person that I really knew that was over 21, you know, that would get me alcohol. I ended up sending him to AA because he was really sick and he needed help, you know. And so he ended up getting sober, which was a big mistake. I was like, what did I do? I'm an idiot, you know. I just sent my alcohol supply to AA. And that's how I looked at people, too, which is really wrong. And so, you know, he got sober. He got Arno as a sponsor, and he was like, at that point, really the only person left in my life, you know, besides my family, you know. But I really had cut them off, you know, during that year, wasn't talking to them anymore, and so, you know, my last drink was not very eventful. You know, like I said, I really drank by myself in my room, you know, and I should, before I get to that last drink, I should tell you, you know, there was a period of time where, you know, when my sister and my mom were getting sober, where we'd have lots of people from Midtown and AA coming over to our house, you know, cooking dinner, you know, some of them were helping us clean our house. I mean, just to give you a picture of how we were living, you know, it was just, the house, I was embarrassed to have people come over because, I mean, and that, you know, it was kind of disgusting. You know, I my room, I had a hamster, a pet hamster that died, and I let it live, you know, stay in its cage for 3 days in my room before we took it out. And, like, you couldn't see the floor. It, like, my room and my life kind of matched what was going on inside. And so these people were coming over, and they were, like, clearing, like, paths, you know, we got dumpsters, you know, and they were, like, really, I mean, they literally put our house back together. I mean, they, like, put our lives back together, you know, they just came over. God. See, I don't want to cry, because once I start, I can't stop, so I'm trying not to. I'm not kidding either about that. So they really did come over, and they demonstrated, you know, love with their actions, and you know, of course, I was still drinking, so none of that could really get through me, you know, but I would be in my room, you know, and I'd come out, and these people would be, like, you know, painting the walls and stuff like that, and I remember Jack was one person that was over there a lot, and I would just grill him about AA, you know. What is this AA thing? Don't you think going to meetings every day is a little excessive, you know, like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, what's alcoholism about? I don't think I'm an alcoholic, you know? And then, like, they would go to the AA meeting, and then I'd go in my room, and I'd crack open a beer from the case that was underneath my bed, and I would drink, you know, until they came home from the meeting, you know? Because I was an alcoholic. And so that was kind of how, I mean, that's how it went. And you know, stuff like that. And so I was definitely alcoholic. I'm definitely alcoholic. There's nothing normal about that. What ended up happening was my last drink was by myself in my room. Well, I guess I had a friend that had come over and brought alcohol for me. And I called that guy, my drinking friend Ted, who had gotten sober in AA. He had a month sober. And I called him and I said, asked him, you know, I wanted to drink with him, you know, and or, you know, see if he wanted to hang out the next night and get more alcohol. I don't know what I was doing. And he was like, well, I'm actually sober now. And I remember, like, my stomach dropping, and he said, you know, you're destroying your life, and there's nothing I can do about it, but if you want, you can come to a meeting. And I was like, what? Yeah, this is horrible, you know. But it was another moment of grace or clarity or something, and I said, okay, you know, and that was the first time I had gone to a meeting on my own volition. It wasn't a rehab or a parent sending me. You know, I went because I didn't know what else to do, you know. And, okay. All right. I'm a crier, as you can tell, but, So I went, you know, I went with him every day for 30 days. I was like, he was my buddy, my running buddy. And I went to these meetings, and a lot of times I would sit and I'd count the floor tiles. I wouldn't really listen. I still thought this was a weird, weird place. You know, the prayer got to me. You know, I wasn't really into the whole God thing. And at that point, I was pretty anti-God. And I remember, you know, at 30 days, you know, I wasn't using that. I still had that sponsor by name only. I wasn't using her, and I noticed that Ted was using a sponsor named Arno, and I was hanging out with him a lot because he was hanging out with Arno, you know, and so I ended up at 30 days sober. I went to a camp out with Midtown, the Run Pig Run camp out. It's for Iggy Pop. And it was, like, right before Hawaii, where there's an Iggy Pop conference in Hawaii, and everyone was going to go there. And I remember I got, that weekend, I actually ended up getting Arno as a sponsor. I guess I did whatever Ted did at that time, but it ended up being right, because he's still my sponsor 12 years later, you know? I had basically up at that point, during that 30-day period, I had gone to a lot of Midtown meetings, and I remember lying in meetings about my sobriety date. I had gotten threats from my parents and from the rehab. You know, I had just been released. I missed a whole part of my story. I got released from that rehab. They let me go because they were tired of hearing me complain. I had passed enough tests miraculously that they let me go, and I was still drinking. I don't know how I passed it, and you know, I basically, you know, that was it. And so I, you know, was lying about my sobriety date. My parents said that if I drank one more time or I failed another test, They found out that I had drank again, that they would send me to inpatient rehab for 2 years in Minnesota. And that was a big motivating factor. So that's why I wanted to say that, because that was a big motivating factor to go to AA. And I knew at that point I could not stay sober on my own, because I didn't have the rehab for a couple months, pressuring me, and I was still drinking, and I had done a little experimentation where, I tried to stop for a little bit, just to see if I could, make it, and I couldn't go longer than 2 weeks. I could not stay away from it longer than 2 weeks on my own. And so, I ended up, calling Ted, and then that was my last drink, and I started going to meetings here. And so I knew, I think that was, I knew I couldn't do it on my own, but I wasn't sure if AA could help me, So that was where I was at. And so I basically, I got Arno as a sponsor that weekend, and I, they were giving out chips, and I told Arno and Ted my real sobriety date, and those were the only two people that knew that I actually had 30 days sober. Everyone else thought I had 6 months, including my mom, who was at the camp out. And they did the chips, and, the person who was giving out the chips was, someone gave her a 30-day chip or something to give to me, and I said, we have a 30-day chip for Kathleen. And I'm so glad my mom had a sponsor at that time, because I would have been in Minnesota. Because she was very upset. But she got over it, and I got to stay in AA and get sober, thank God. That's what I needed, I didn't need another rehab, but, I mean, who knows. But everything happened the way it did, and I'm sober today. And so I, I remember that was the start of my sobriety, really, because I got honest about my sobriety date through no fault of my, I really didn't, I was helped, I needed a lot of help. I never picked up a 24-hour chip, because I was too afraid. So, but I did pick up a 30-day chip, and I was very, oh, God, that was very scary to me, because I didn't like getting up in front of people, but I did it, and I got a sponsor, and I remember I was 15 at the time, so I was very young, and I was the youngest person in Midtown at the time, only, next to my sister, who was 8 minutes older than me. And then there was, maybe a 2-year age gap at that point. But so we were the youngest, and I remember loving that, kind of. I like the attention. So I kind of hopped right in the middle, and I didn't, my first year was really a gift. I did not do much, I think I did my first fourth step at 9 months sober. And I remember it wasn't very thorough, I really had this idea that I was a nice girl who drank too much, and honestly, it took me a few years till I got a solid first step, in where it came to my heart, where I was really not, and I still, and I know today that if I let up on, the steps and talking to you and being around you and doing AA, I can go right back there, it's not like a done deal, and so I basically ended up, doing the fourth step, and it was probably a page long, and that was it. There's a couple people on there. I mean, I didn't interact with very many people in my life, as you probably have heard. And it wasn't a big experience, but I learned how to see my part in things. I remember it occurred to me that there are other people out there in the world that had thoughts and feelings like me, which was a revelation to me, because I didn't live like that. It really was all about me. I was so self-centered. I mean, it was all about how I was feeling, and that's all I cared about. And it didn't even occur to me how I affected other people, and so that helped me see that. And I mean, I was insane for most of my sobriety, until recently. I mean, really, honestly, I have a lot of sober stories, and I told them I would tell these stories. They're a little crazy. I remember when I was, like, in my first couple years of sobriety, I got out of a relationship, and I was very angry, and I thought it would be a good idea to pay someone back. And I remember I was in, it was the blizzard, it was during the blizzard of 97, I think, and I was in the basement, I was by myself, and this is me not calling my sponsor, you know, not really doing the steps, not interested in helping anyone else, and I remember, you know, I was losing my mind, found out, you know, he had found someone else, you know, and I started looking through, my dad had like a little library down there, and I started looking through his books, and there was this book called Book on Revenge, and which is one of my major defects, and so I thought, this looks interesting, and I found this little section on how to give people the runs, and and there's like this root grown in California, totally herbal, natural, you know, didn't want to mess any sobriety up, and I read about it, and if you ingest it within 15 minutes, it's done, you know, it's not like my stomach hurts, I should go, it's like done, and so I went on a 9-month rampage looking for this stuff. I mean, I went to Sutton Place, I went to Gourmet Giant, I mean, every time, I didn't drive at time. So I, you know, if we stopped at this grocery store, I was looking for it. I was always going, you know, to like the supplemental aisle, and no one really knew what was going on, you know. I wouldn't tell my sponsor this, I tell you. And I guess it was like 9 months later. My dad took me to the Renaissance Festival up in Maryland, and we had just, you know, it's been a cool day, you know, hanging out with dad, and we were walking out of the exit, and I looked over, and there's this hut. And it said plant and herb shop. And I was like, if any place has it, it's this place. And so I went in, and there it was. It was like glowing, you know, like in this bag. And I bought it. And I bought it. I brought it home with me. It was Sunday in Midtown. It was hot. And people were wearing shorts. And I brought it home, and I grinded it up in my mom's coffee grinder, and I don't remember to this day if I cleaned it out that well. My mom could have had a very interesting morning the next day, and I put it in a little baggie, and I brought it to Midtown, and I went to get coffee, and Bridget, who also I just saved my butt, you know, and she knew me like the back of her hand, you know. She, you know, I had offered that person a cup of coffee because you do nice things for people that you, you know, are mad at. And Bridget walked up and she said, "What are you up to?" Cause she could just tell by looking at me. And I don't think she knows to this day. I don't think he knows to this day that she saved his butt. Anyways, I'm going to withhold names, but they're both still sober. Bridget and the other person. So it didn't happen, but that is how crazy, you know, you could tell I was a little crazy. And not using a sponsor, clearly, not being honest with a sponsor. And so that was like, you know, early sobriety. I remember at 18 months sober, a little before then, I was suicidal, you know. I was definitely, you know, playing with a butcher knife, thinking, wouldn't it be nice? You know, I was doing self-destructive things in sobriety, and I wasn't showering, I wasn't washing my clothes, I wasn't cleaning my room, I wasn't living sober. It was as if, you know, I had just taken alcohol out of my life, took the solution out of my life. You know, that was my solution, and not put anything in there in place. And I was going crazier and crazier, you know, and I just couldn't, I didn't get it. I thought, I'm going to meetings every day, I have a sponsor. What am I doing wrong, you know? I think I did some service. I don't think I really had any, like, regular service positions at that point in my sobriety. And I had no clue what I was doing, really. And honestly, you know, people were trying to help me. People were trying to get through to me. I was just unreachable, you know? and you know, it was always surrounding a relationship or something going wrong that the true colors would shine, you know. And and I remember, I'd go in and out. You know, I wrote many fourth and fifth steps. You know, lots of, you know, it came out that maybe I'm not a nice girl that drank too much. You know, I had a lot of resentments and a lot of anger. I broke a lot of furniture in sobriety, you know. And really, I'm a selfish taker. I mean, to the core, you know. And even to this day, you know, I was riding up with them and talking to them about, like, there's a lot of, you know, I made, you know, some financial amends to my mom, but there's a lot of stuff that I still need to change in my relationships with my parents. And I have these old ideas that their money is mine, you know. And not that I don't have money. It's just that is how selfish I am. I really need to, you know, like, I really feel that is, like, what I fall back on. And I'm just a taker there. And I remember that was a lot of the amends that needed to be made. Growing up, I had a grandmother who was blind. And she's a difficult person, but she's a nice, you know, she's cool, you know, she's cool. She's the only grandparent I had, you know, because my grandfathers both died before I was born. My other grandmother, like, I think I was 7 when she passed away, or maybe I was a little younger, because I don't really remember her too much, but she was cool. So she came to live with us, and I remember just being the selfish teenager, you know, budding alcoholic, and just, she couldn't go to the bathroom on her own, you know, like, and she'd be like, can you help me, take me to the bathroom, you know, I'd just make her wait, you know, or I wouldn't do, you know, I'd just do mean things. I was very mean to her, and I didn't realize that I carried that kind of stuff with me, you know. I just, none of that, like, I didn't understand how I operated. I didn't understand that I had this disease called alcoholism, and I drank so I didn't have to deal with that stuff. And that, you know, I needed a spiritual way of life, or I was going to drink, you know, and die, you know. And I didn't understand that this was a fatal illness. A lot of my sobriety, it was a lot of pain. I really think I hit my bottom in sobriety, so I drank very short period of time. Another story, you know, 5 years sober, same situation, not happy about a breakup. And I remember this time I was riding to the beach, you know, I had just gotten out of work. I worked at Nordstrom as, like, the voice, if you go to Nordstrom, they're, you know, calling to customers, you know. It was like the closing shift, so it was really late. I was really tired, and I was particularly suicidal that night. And I stopped at a stoplight, and this woman jumped in front of my car, and I didn't really, you know, I was like, what is this? And she was, you know, crazy. I mean, she was like, I don't have a gun, I don't have a gun. And I was like, okay, you know, like, that's cool, get out of my way. And she was like, I need a ride. And I said, when I thought, I just had a moment where I was so miserable, I thought, well, maybe if I pick her up, maybe if I take her where she needs to go, maybe she'll kill me and I won't have to go to hell for suicide. So I invited her into my car, and we went on our way. And I ended up, she took me to this crack neighborhood, and I didn't realize till hindsight that I took her on a crack deal. This is 5 years sober. And then drove her back to her car, because it didn't occur to me that when I picked her up, she said her car broke down and she needed a ride to get a spare key at her cousin's house, because that's going to start her broken down car. I didn't put those together until afterwards. So that was basically, I mean, I was nuts, you know. I really needed a higher power, and I remember driving her, you know, I took her home, I took her back to where we came from, and she, you know, she was being nice to me on the way back. She'd, like, gotten happy, you know, after, just, like, you know, all coming clear later, you know, and she just, dead in her tracks when we stopped the car, and she looked at me, she said, don't you ever do that again, you're crazy, you're lucky to be alive. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, I called my sponsor the next day, and he said the same thing. That's higher power, you know. Um, so Sorry, I'm trying not to cry. Okay. I told my story at choir once, this is a few years ago, and I cried for like 30 minutes straight. And I sound like a sheep when I cry, so I just don't want to do it. So anyways, that was me at 5 years sober, so clearly, you know, I wasn't helping anyone or doing anything to get better here. And meanwhile, people all around me were getting better, you know. At that point, you know, I think my sister had actually moved out of town. She was going to college in Boston. I think I was living with my mom at the time still. I'm not sure. Still taking off her, you know, and I remember, you know, years went by. I mean, I really was just interested in getting my way, and that's all I cared about. And I was in college, you know, I graduated high school, I was in college, and I was, you know, pretty much, you know, I remember I was taking, you know, these two night classes, and was missing a couple meetings during the week. I would frequently skip meetings to study, and I would, you know, call, you know, and I, you know, wouldn't call my sponsor, I wouldn't tell him, you know, I was keeping lots of secrets, and I ended up basically was going to tell him, you know, he suggested that maybe I drop those night classes because I was getting ready to drink, and I couldn't see it, you know, and I was very angry at him for saying that. It was just very, like, I couldn't see it, I didn't get what he was saying. And it's like, isn't that how it always is? You know, we're the last ones to know, you know. And that I wasn't really doing anything, you know, to stay sober. And that was like, I was, you know, taking the meetings out of the equation. I was done. And so, you know, I was driving him home from a meeting, and I was going to tell him thank you for helping me, you know, but I'm going to stay in class, and because it would mean I'd have to graduate a year later, you know, because they only have one graduation date, and I wasn't willing to give that up. I had a way, and an agenda, and which is, you know, always been a struggle for me, and so, but somehow he got through to me, you know, and I ended up dropping that class and graduating a year later and staying sober, which I'd much rather do that, you know. So that was like 7 years sober. I remember, I guess I had just celebrated my 7th anniversary, and my sponsor called me and congratulated me on celebrating 7 1-year anniversaries. And I just remember, I was like, I felt like a newcomer, you know? I was like, what's wrong with me? What? I can't even get it. And I think right around then, I was writing my 8th step, my 8th and 9th step. And, you know, and I started getting interested in getting a higher power, because I'd spent my whole sobriety chasing whatever my agenda was, whatever made me feel okay, you know, whether it was like the boyfriend, the grad, you know, the college degree, you know, getting skinny or whatever. I mean, it was like anything on the outside to make me feel better. I just completely missed the boat on the higher power thing. Completely. And I'd hear people talk about it in meetings, and I thought, you're lying, you know? Because I would never, like, I remember my first higher power was an inanimate object, because that's as far as I can get. And it took me at least 6 months to even even agree to pray, you know, or even want to pray. And it was like this cross, and, you know, that was lit up at night, and I would pass it before and after a meeting every time I went. And, like, I remember, you know, it had been months going to meetings, and eventually that cross, the light burnt out. But at that point, you know, my higher power had become meetings, because I'd go to meetings, and I would leave feeling better than when I came. And I couldn't do that on my own. And so, So I started, anyways, at 7 years old, I started getting interested in getting some sort of an inside life, you know, inner life, and a relationship with God, and started helping people. Getting involved in service. I've never sponsored lots of people at a time, but I've tried to help others, and I have lots of service positions, and there's many different ways to do the 12-step, I believe. But what I'm learning now at this point in my sobriety is that people are what make the difference, you know, and people are the most important things to my sobriety right now. So basically, you know, my sobriety, like, just recently, I just celebrated 12 years, and I just got out of another, you know, four-year-long relationship, which is like a month and a half ago, and I've approached it differently, you know, this time, because I've learned a lot from sobriety and my past actions, and I'm sponsoring, you know, a girl right now that, you know, needs a lot of help, and that has, you know, made a huge difference in my sobriety, and I feel like I have a lot to learn, you know, like, a lot, you know. I don't know everything like I used to, you know. I'm like a know-it-all, you know. My sponsor loves to tell me that, you know. And so I basically, I need to go water. So, you know, I've learned a lot about myself, you know, where I think it was like a few months ago, I found this tape of like how, it was like, I guess I had a little recorder from when I was like 11 or 12. Someone had bought us a recorder. It was my sister and I in the car with my grandmother. And we were just teasing her, you know. I mean, we were being horrible to her. I mean, it wasn't a pleasant tape, you know, it really wasn't. And I really smashed that I'm a nice person idea, you know. It was kind of painful to listen to, but I have since made amends to her. She was blind, and she liked us, liked my sister and I to read stuff to her. So I went to her gravesite, and I read her a letter, you know, which, you know, I feel, you know, at peace with that. And I've made financial amends to my mother. I still have a lot of work to do with that, because I do still have that idea that I can go to her, you know, always, which is not going to be the case, and take from her if I need it, you know. And the same thing with my dad. And I, you know, did lunch with him every week until just recently. I got a new job up in Frederick, so I can't do it. But we try to see each other on the weekends. And so I've kind of, like, he knows what's going on in my life, you know, which I don't think I really did tell him anything before, you know, I got sober about my life. So it's been cool to let him be my dad, you know, and I just have so many good friends. I mean, just in the recent, like, months, like, I have been carried, you know. Okay, I'm going to cry now, because it's getting towards the end. I really have been, like, it's been God, you know, and I've had experiences here, you know. I go to my sponsor got me into prayer and meditation in this class on Wednesday nights, you know, where we meditate together as, like, this group, and it's not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it certainly introduced me to you know, meditation, and I went on a retreat right down the road from here at Seven Oaks Retreat Center, and I did, like, a week long of silence, and I almost went crazy, but I saw a lot of things. I mean, on a silent retreat, the first moment I could open my mouth, I lied. You know, there was like this, you know, like, it was like this guy was helping me out, and I was like at this meeting with the retreat leader, and I lied to him, you know, and then I sit on that for 24 hours, and then I promptly said, I'm sorry, you know, because I didn't have any distractions, so I've learned a lot, and I don't know, I guess, you know, if you're new, I mean, I guess, really, honestly, like, I know in my gut, if I don't do this, I will drink again. I'm alcoholic, you know, and I don't know if I'll die right away, but I don't want to go back to the way I was living, you know, and I know I can live that way in sobriety if I'm not doing this, if I'm not applying the steps to my life, and I'm not helping other people, and I mean, I can just go right back to that weird Kathleen from, you know, if I spend too much time by myself in my head, and people know when I spend too much time by myself, you know, And so, you know, I need people, I need the steps, I need everything. You know, I need to turn my life over to Alcoholics Anonymous, not just what I want. You know, like, not just the alcohol, you know, which has been my story throughout my sobriety, but my life. And I've been able to do that more and more throughout sobriety. And I'm one of those sometimes slowly people, I guess. But I think it's 5 till, and I really appreciate everyone listening, and thanks for letting me share.